Zimmerman confessed to the shooting, claiming self-defense. Martin's family says he was murdered.
Two young boys are arraigned in the brutal beating of a 94-year-old man.
11 and 15 years old were arrested earlier this week.
School officials knew teachers were abusing Aaron, but didn't stop it.
Obviously don't care about the special needs kids and their condition.
They knew everything. They knew both incidents, and they did nothing about it. I'm serious.
According to the district's own investigation, Aaron was first abused by Melanie Pickens at Hopewell Middle School in 2007. As CBS Atlanta first reported last year, school officials covered up the abuse of at least six students.
Join Carla Simpson of EOTM Radio and Gerald Rose of New Order Human Rights Organization. Tune in July 24th at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Let's talk about correcting the system of injustice. Don't just listen. Do something. Call in 718-664-6543. Tune in on EOTMradio.com. That's July 24th at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Let's stop this mess in the U.S.
Thank you.
On EOTM Radio. Let's talk about it.
Enter Glory, the best knife sharpener money can buy.
Girls, they love me.
act, and he wouldn't tell. But the truth is you're going through hell, but you hide it so well. You tug on his sleeve, you beg and you plead, anything so that he won't leave. You would be like, oh well, oh well. And half of the time, you knew he was lying, said he was on his really grind. He's providing so well. And now he's out there running game on you. They're at the drop of a dime. And when he thinks you're at home with the kids on the couch, on his TV all the time. If you think they're loading down, I'm on my way. Wait until tonight, girl.
Welcome to another edition of the Don Adams Jr. Talk Show. Got an exciting lineup for you tonight, family. Let me get my normal acknowledgments out of the way. Welcome, as always. Tonight, I'm gonna put the topic out there first, man. Tonight, we're talking about a man living with a false conviction. That's right, a man living with a false conviction. Very serious topic. You know, as y'all know, most of my topics have to do with the system and how corrupt that I believe that it is, not only because I've watched it, but because I've worked in it. And, you know, tonight I'm very fortunate to be able to present to you an actual real-life case. You know, this man is currently incarcerated, and for those of you who are curious enough to want to ask, don't ask, because he does have access to a cell phone or whatever, however, whatever means it is that he's contacting the show tonight. So I want to put that out there. But with that being said, I want to give my normal acknowledgments to you. First of all, for giving me your time. You know, as I always like to acknowledge, you know, time is the most valuable commodity that you can offer anybody. And that's one of the reasons why they incarcerate folks, to take away their time. With that being said, I want to say hello, or I want to say give out my enormous acknowledgments to the EOTM family, starting with Carla B., of course, our fearless leader. Ronnie, first leader of GPT, Queen G, of course, Q, the newest addition to the family. Jimmy, EOTM Baker, out on the West Coast Connection. I want to send out shouts to the EOTM Street Team as well. The brothers doing work from down under. Ron and his sidekick, Mother Jenkins. And for those of you who don't know, show information can be found at www.eotmradio, or you can go to www.queensofinternetradio.com. And my personal email address, for those of you who want to contact me, donadamstalkshow@eotmradio. And for purposes of the show tonight, well, every night, hell, the number doesn't change, 718-664-6543. That's the call-in number, family, 718-664-6543. We're going to get the blog room open in just a minute. I'm working on that right now. Actually, I'm not working on it right now. I'm just going to tell you it's going to take a minute because I'm not ready to get it open yet. This is a very sensitive subject, and I'm still working on information on this man's case, just to let you all know just how serious I believe that this is. Also, before we go on any further, I want to send my normal shouts out to our family in Jamaica, Australia, the UK, and in New Zealand. That's right, I mentioned Australia because we have some folks in Australia that have been listening to the show. That's right, family, the show is international. All of that being said, family, let's get with this thing. And I want to start out with a quote. And the quote that I want to start out with is that we all have strength enough to endure the misfortunes of others. That's a very powerful quote. Because I think that it speaks volumes for those of us who like to sit on the outside and look in and point fingers and say, coulda, shoulda, woulda. We all have strength enough to endure the misfortunes of other people. Now, tonight's topic is a man living with a false conviction. Family, I've already given out my welcomes, but this is a story about a man who said that he was falsely convicted, and he is currently being held as an inmate in the state of Georgia penal system. Here's my question. How is it that a man can be charged with a crime of violence, convicted, sentenced, and held without a victim to his crime ever being declared? Now, I've since talked with Big Man prior to the show, and his case is very, very, very complicated. I want to put that out there. Very, very, very complicated case. And I understand it because I have a legal mind. And I don't say that as an insult to anyone that's out there listening to the show, but I say that because I've worked in the system, I've been trained to deal with the system, and I'm educated about the system, formally educated about the system. So with some of the details that he will reveal tonight, we'll field questions about that, but I want to point this out. It's very important for people to realize that before we get started with the show, as I said before, you know, I like to put it out there that the system, so-called prosecutors and judges that are put in place to ensure that things are done correctly, don't always do what they're supposed to do. They're human, just like you and I are. Think about that point in time when you've had to make a decision as to whether or not you were going to do the right thing or the wrong thing based upon a small scale. Well, they're only human, and they also have been faced with the same types of convictions. So I want to put that out there. Also, I want to put the disclaimer out. I love to say this, that the thoughts and opinions of me and anyone else that speaks on the show are their own and my own, not necessarily connected with anyone else that's affiliated with EOTM. Basically, y'all hold me accountable for what I say and don't go chasing after anybody else because I'm grown and I get paid to do this. So with that being said, what we're going to do now is I see we have some folks already chiming in. Let me open up the lines. All right, let's start with 909-227. You're on the air, Don Adams, Junior Talk Show.
Hi, Don. How you doing? This is Steve with Q.
Hey, Q. What's up, baby? How are you?
I'm good. You know, I can't complain, you know. You have someone right now that's in a crisis situation. I cannot complain.
Yeah, absolutely. And we're definitely glad to have you on, too. You know, and I know you're a very insightful woman. You know, and I don't say that, you know, to say that women aren't insightful, but fellas, and, ladies and gentlemen, everyone within the earshot of my voice, trust me when I tell you, she's insightful above most. Believe me when I tell you that. And I'm glad to have you a part of it, you know, participating in the show tonight. It's a very sensitive subject to me. And also we have, looks like Carla's on the line as well. Carla, you with us?
I am. I'm riding tight with you guys tonight.
Okay, good deal.
What's up?
Hi, Carla.
What's good? What's good? I'll just say really quickly, thanks for letting me chime in. I'm only going to be on for a little bit, but I definitely wanted to hear, you know, Big Man and his case, and then I can voice my opinion on the situation.
Okay, excellent. You know, I want to set the stage, you know, before we bring Big Man on. He's going to be on, family, in about 15 minutes. You know, and for some of you out there who don't understand or know the penal system, I want to set the stage for this thing. And within the penal system in this country lives a whole separate city, meaning people within the penal system can acquire drugs, they can acquire prostitution, they can acquire money, they can acquire phones, they can do whatever they, you know, if they have the clout to do it, they can acquire many different things. Now, I'm not putting the shadow over Big Man. But what I am saying is this, for those of you out there who do not know or understand the penal system, it is very possible for this man to do what he is doing tonight. It is very risque for this man to do what he's doing tonight, for him to open himself up and to put himself in a position to tell his story publicly. It tells me one of two things. Number one, that he really genuinely needs help because, you know, with being in the position that he's in, and once he puts his story out there, it's very, very likely and possible that someone may be tuned in and may figure out just who he is. And the fact that he's able to do that will cause him to be in harm's way. Please believe me when I tell you that. So with that being said, family, this is why I said, you know, for this man to reach out and to say, hey, I need help. I want to say that this, to me, was a prime opportunity for EOTM to step up and say, you know what, we're all about empowerment. This is what we're about. Let's see what it's about. Let's make it happen. Now, I want to put this out there before he comes on, and I want to say that, you know, I am a supporter of Big Man, but I am also operating in the media arena. So I'm going to ask him the difficult questions. I'm going to ask him the hard questions, and I fully expect anyone else that calls in and wants to respond to anything that he says to ask him the hard and difficult questions. But I also want to say this, let's be respectful and mindful of the fact that he is a human being, and he very well could be innocent of what he's accused of doing. So with that being said, later on in the show, I'm going to put out some statistics on people that are wrongfully convicted by prosecutors. I'm going to also put out there, I want to explain to the public what it means to operate under what the judicial system calls autonomy, operating under the colors of the law. Some of y'all are going to be very interested to know what that means because I'll say this. It means that prosecutors and police officers to some degree can operate and do things under the colors of the law, in other words, in the commission of their duties, without worrying about reprisal or someone coming back and saying, hey, you did wrong. Guess what? We're going to put you in jail. I know there's a case in California about an officer who shot an unarmed man. We're going to talk about that too briefly later on in the show. And a lot of folks are upset about that because the officer didn't get convicted of murder, but he was convicted of manslaughter. Also, family, later on the show, I want to try to illustrate to you what the states are doing to make amends once they've realized that they have wrongfully convicted someone, because there are plenty of instances where they realize, hey, oh, we sent the wrong man or the wrong woman to jail. Oh, my God, what's the deal? And then they want to give you a pocket full of money and say, well, we can't give you back your time, but we'll give you some money. Does it make it better? Does it make it better once you've been indoctrinated into the prison system, once you've had to live the lifestyle of an inmate? Because that's essentially what it is. Because there's a whole another set of rules that comes into place when you become indoctrinated into the penal system. Okay, family? So with that being said, you know, I just want to put that information out there so that we could go ahead and, you know, kind of sort of set the stage. And also, what I want to do is, well, we got another caller that's coming in as well. 478, you're on the air with the Don Adams Jr. Talk Show. 478-228, you're on the air, Don Adams Jr. Talk Show. All right. Well, we'll go ahead and give him some time to get it together. But in the meantime, family, before we get started, I want to take a break, a commercial break, and then we're going to come back and we'll see if we can get Big Man with us, and then we'll get this party started. All right?
Without a key,
Welcome back, family, to another edition of the Don Adams Sr. Talk Show. Top of the hour, I mentioned that we're going to... Actually, let me just put the topic back out there again. Tonight's topic is a man living with a false conviction. This is a story about a man who says that he was falsely convicted and is currently being held in, as an inmate in the Georgia penal system. Here's the question that I have. Is how is it that a man can be charged with a crime of violence, convicted, sentenced, and held without a victim of his crime, to his crime ever being declared? I've spoken with him since the publication of the show. The victim has been declared, and I think that his argument is that the intent could not have been there. It's the intent. And we're still waiting on Big Man to join us. But, family, I want to put this out there. For those of you who are staunch law enforcement supporters and for those of you who currently believe that, you know, hey, this system of justice that we currently operate under is a wonderful system. Is a wonderful system. It's fallible. And later on in the show, as I said also, family, I'm going to put out statistics on those folks that have been jailed wrongfully and wrongfully convicted. Also, I want to explain to you what the states are trying to do once they realize that they have wrongfully convicted someone. And I'll just give you a hint. Basically, it's just to pay them off. And also, we want to talk about later on the show, autonomy, colors of the law, very serious terms that people need to be aware of, because this is what allows prosecutors and police officers consciously to do the things that they do without having to worry about reprisal. All right, with no further ado, family, I want you all to please welcome to the stage or to the show the man of the hour, Mr. Big Man. I've set the stage as best I could here. Big Man, you with us? Hold on a second. Let me get this thing right. All right, Big Man, you with us?
Yeah, I'm right here with y'all.
All right, Big Man, how you feeling?
I'm feeling all good today.
It's good, brother. Well, you know, you and I talked earlier in the show, man, and I'm going to lay the ground rules out because I've already said this, you know, prior to you coming on, and I'm going to put it out there. You are currently incarcerated, and for those of you who are curious enough to want to explain or ask why this is happening or how this is going down, that's not your business. At the end of the day, he has access to what he has access to, so I'm going to put that out there. This is a real story. This is a live story. This man has reached out. And he is asking for our attention. He's asking for us to just listen to what it is that he has to say about his particular situation. And after I've done some research on his particular case, I have said to myself, you know what? If he reached and I heard, it is my duty to allow. And this is why we're here today. Now, Big Man, before we go further, listen, I want you to know that Carla B. is on the line with us. Also, we have Q, who is another one of our personalities. With EOTM, who's on the line. And we're going to give you the stage, and we're going to let you take your time, and we want you to express and tell us what it is that you want us to know about your situation. And I want to also be up front with you, Big Man. I'm going to ask some difficult questions. You and I talked earlier. Nothing outside of what we talked about. But I'm going to ask you some difficult questions, and I'm going to open the floor for those that will ask respectful questions. Questions, but difficult questions to you as well. So with that being said, those are the ground rules, brother. Go with it and give us your story.
Okay. August the 5th, 1998 was the date all this took its course. August the 5th, 1998, me and a couple guys, we was riding, and my girlfriend at the time, we got caught up in a situation with some rival gangs. The situation led to fires changing. During the fire changing, my late girlfriend was killed, Lanissa Wilson, known to the people as a gangster Nikki. And during this situation at hand, I was incarcerated. But at the time of the incarceration, it wasn't no charge brought against no one amongst me or the other men that was riding in the car with us at that given time. But several hours later, a charge was put against me. Stating that, 24 hours later, stating that I was the assumed shooter of a handgun that later on in court found out to be, did not have Mr. Big Man handprints, neither on the gun or anything within the scene. But I, too, let people know Mr. Big Man was on the scene because this situation really was a victimized situation where I became more of a criminal active person instead of a victim, which I was, being attacked. During the situation after the attack, as I was stated, Mr. Big Man took upon incarceration where he was held several months, a year and a half, basically in the county jail. Upon this situation, they could never find render an indictment for the charges that they prompted against Mr. Big Man. So in itself, the district attorney, as I would state, you know, I learned this after researching myself during this state of incarceration, that I was brought into a courtroom with an illegal indictment. And I would like you to know, illegal indictment is something that was frivolous. You know what illegal means. So the actual charge, Mr. Big Man was never able to charge for because they had no evidence to push a case. But due to the reputation of Mr. Big Man upon the streets, he just couldn't be let go that easy and that simple. So the allegations came to the point where the district attorney, her sisters, and amongst those who worked with her, brings about an indictment of malice murder, which is an intention killing, meaning premeditated. You went to do something knowing what you was going to do. As I stated earlier, Mr. Big Man was a victim that got caught in a situation doing handgun play as we was riding. And as I bring you back, during this situation, Mr. Big Man, as I state now, did not know of the malice murder to several years being incarcerated. Going through the procedures of court, Mr. Big Man was sentenced to a life sentence in prison. But under the guidelines of a charge that wasn't even charged towards his indictment, meaning a felony murder, aggravated assault, commission of firearm during a felony, and possession of firearm by convicted felony, which possession of firearm by convicted felony was dead doctored. Commission of firearm during a felony, Mr. Big Man previously got sentenced to 5 years. Aggravated assault on unknown pedestrians, 10 years, and for the felony murder charge, which is the same as the aggravated assault because you cannot have a felony murder case without a known felon, meaning that you was in a commission of a crime to commit a crime, stating that they were stating that I was in a commission to commit aggravated assault, but on no victim because the charge was prompted against and wrote in the indictment on unknown pedestrians. As I state again, unknown pedestrians. The felony murder, which in itself, like I say, Mr. Big Man was sentenced to a life imprisonment. Afterwards, several years, going through the court procedures and with the frivolous actions that have been took in his course, Mr. Big Man went into the case himself from studying and studying and studying to find out that from the jump, he's never been to court for his initial charge, which is your indictment. Meaning that within itself, Mr. Big Man previously sits in prison on a void indictment, meaning that he's never actually been into amongst a courtroom for the actual crime that lays on the paperwork, a computer file of his indictment, which is murder, intentionally and premeditated, meaning that I was intentionally going to do something, which now is the motive of the whole case in itself. Right now, Mr. Big Man is fighting the situation in several federal courts that has held back on the appeal because there's really basically no way to get around your own documents. Many things showed within the trial of this situation that even the co-defendants that several testified spoke in terms of being state witnesses but turned around and told similar actions of truth towards me in favor of the only reason you there because I'm afraid to be here because of the coercion of the district attorney again. As I state, and right now at this present moment, it's awaiting ruling in a district federal court. But things of this nature, Mr. Big Man is speaking out to let it be known that injustice sits highly at the top of the floor plate in Georgia and any other states. And there's many guys within these walls that sits behind here upon injustice, whether he's whoever they profess him to be or whatnot. Any situation no one should be took and put in a situation that's not within the grounds of the law. If you're going to omit the law, omit it in the ways that it is written. And in this situation right here, Mr. Big Man within itself is caught up in the systematic, I would say, crookedness of the law, doing that he's sitting in incarceration right now with a void indictment. Many may not know of this because people look at it from the outside version. You've been to court, you've been sentenced, you was guilty. But not looking on the side of the process this have to go to bring about this guilt and the measures that is being taken. Also within this, you have to recognize this is a human being's life that is being played by another person that is actually getting a check and a bonus if I convict you. So why wouldn't you want extra money just to speak, just so to say, ask yourself that. You know, so you would do certain drastic things to get what you need to be gotten. And at this point, Mr. Big Man becomes a victim of that state, as well as he was August 1998, being a victim in itself, and turned around to get into charge, crime charge of felony murder, as the DA would put it, accidentally killing his girlfriend, which in itself, I'm going to explain to you again, if the crime charge had happened as the district attorney would have said it, I could no longer be in charge with anything but involuntary manslaughter, which would only lead to a longer sentence than 20 years in imprisonment. This is the defense, this is the motive she brought towards the court with this in itself.
So, Big Man, let me ask you something, Big Man. Excuse me for interrupting, but I just want to ask you a question just to be clear. Is your complaint, your biggest complaint, is the fact that the elements of this crime did not exist?
True indeed. The elements of the crime
Is that what your biggest complaint is? Is that the elements of the crime did not exist, and that the prosecutor in turn reworded or reformatted her indictment so that she could get an indictment with the grand jury? Now, one of the things that you didn't mention was that they tried to seek an indictment on you, and it took them 9 months or so to get that indictment, and they only achieved that indictment after the district attorney reworded her indictment. Tell the family about that.
Okay, within 9 months of my incarceration, as I would say, Mr. Beckman never had an indictment. And I'm going to break it down to you in terms. You could be incarcerated, but without that indictment, you're still a suspect. You're never the actual person, or not saying that you're guilty at that time, but you're actually never the suspect to the point where, okay, you're the one that we're going to charge with this. Within that situation, I was incarcerated, as I would say, with no indictment at all for 9 continuous months. But an indictment has been in front of the grand jury, and they couldn't render an indictment for the charge which she has taken me to court for now, which is the felony murder charge, which she prompted charges off the frivolous indictment that she got rendered in the grand jury after 9 months later. Within that time period, it had to be a situation to come up to get this case indicted, or no longer you would have a case. You would have to dismiss. And you can only take a case to the grand jury 3 times, I think, to be exact, within the law of the same charges. And the third time, that's when the charges came up on the different charges, but stated on other paperwork, still the same charge of felony murder. Meaning,
Big man, let me say this to you. We have some folks that are listening. I want you to know this. We have some people that are listening to you right now that are instant messaging me, and from what they gather, they have already, some of the folks are already saying that you shouldn't be there for life or a life sentence, that you should have been there for manslaughter, okay? So I just want to keep you aware of what's going on. You and I talked earlier, so I want to make sure you are aware of that. You know, some folks are already saying that you shouldn't be on a life sentence, but you should be there for manslaughter.
Yes, okay, I understand that.
Okay?
Okay.
Go ahead.
The felony murder, which she never rendered an indictment for the felony murder, as like he said, the people that has been sending instant messages, true indeed, are supposed to have been charged with involuntary manslaughter. Never did I supposed to have the malice murder indictment, which is frivolous, or being pushed towards the felony murder, which she pushed in court. Even during the state of being of the trial, I'm going to explain this. The judge himself, you know, actually, because he reads the indictment, but it, to the once he charged the jury, the judge himself reads that indictment through the jury charges of reading it to the juror. And during that jury charge, he has to read the actual indictment. And during reading the actual indictment, he's himself seeing that, oh, something is wrong. With close memories and transcript paperwork to be exact, he called both counselors, meaning my lawyer and the district attorney. Mind you, not that my lawyer and I had several problems due to money issues, not because of wouldn't give him the money, because you don't get nothing when you ain't presenting nothing, because I should not be here. You know, so we had problems to where he withdrew from the case. And at that time, the state within itself, when my case came to the counselor called on court, they pushed him to go in there. As a trial hearing, on the motion for new trial hearing, the trial lawyer states within itself that he knew not of anything of the case to even go in and represent this case, because speaking in terms of if he had more knowledge of it, the charge, the crime charge may not have been that. Or I may not would be here, right here talking to y'all right now, because I would be out of here, meaning I would have never took it upon this experience within itself. So he was giving knowledge to the court that, you know, I don't know what's going on because I never had any knowledge of this case. I withdrew from the case and y'all appointed me back to his case, meaning that he never did any which what a lawyer is supposed to do, an investigation of anything that was going on, even with the indictment. It should have been known through him. Now, as I state, back to the judge of the jury charges, as he called him to the bench, you know, words was mumbled, as I would state. But to the fact of he has come into the indictment reading, he sees that's not the charge, that's a crime that is charged if it's in this courtroom today. Not, as I say, it's felony murder. But when you read the indictment, which he has to read to the grand jury, it says murder, which is malice, which is intent. Premeditated, which this case is not in nowhere above that state. All this is a conspiracy towards the fact that Mr. Big Man was a person upon the streets that may have created some type of name. Now, within the court, we cannot let you go, because as the instant messages came in, if the theory was just that of Mr. Big Man accidentally shooting his girlfriend and them being a victim and him firing back of something of that sort, the charges would have been involuntary manslaughter. All right, Mr. Big Man.
All right, let me say this, and I hate to interrupt you, but let me say this to you. Yeah, Carla, speak your mind. Everyone speak your mind, of course. This show is about folks speaking your minds, period.
Yeah, hey,
Mr. Don EOT Adams wants to put it out there. This is about everybody speaking their minds. I don't orchestrate or any of the above, you know, have anything to do with anyone's opinions, all right? But I want to say this to you, Mr. Big Man, you know, and just listening to your story myself, and then after I make this comment, I'm going to open the lines up because we've got some callers, man, that want to talk to you. I'm going to say this to you, because in my opinion, as a former law enforcement officer, you and I have talked, you know, I don't think that you being sent to jail was necessarily a wrong thing, but I do feel as though your jury and your judge allowed some things to go on that shouldn't have happened. Now, I do feel that you may have been sent away on a life sentence because of your previous reputation prior to you getting into the court system, prior to you getting in the court system on this particular case, which I do think is wrong. But with that being said, you know, bruh, I'm just going to be honest with you. You know, with your lifestyle being what it was prior to this young lady losing her life, and if she was with you and if the DA was able to attach your lifestyle to that incident, then on some level it does make you culpable. Now, should you be in jail for the rest of your life? I don't believe so. Not at all. So I'm going to leave it at that. Now, I want to say this to you. You know, we've got some folks that want to give you some comment, or at least want to speak to you. And I'm going to open it up to, first, well, let's go with Carla B. first. Carla B., go ahead.
No, I don't have to necessarily go first.
Okay, well, that's, I have a question. Okay, Q, go ahead, Q.
Hi, how you doing, big man? You have to excuse me because my phone was kind of going in and out. If I missed anything and you have to kind of retrace whatever you're saying, you know, you have to apologize for that. But my question, my first question actually is, of all the people that were there and the people that were in the car and not in the car, why did they choose you as their number one suspect?
As I will state, the reputation that was looked upon on my name during it when I was on the street, because as soon as they found out that I was one of the individuals in the car, all the attention went to me, just as the fact that no one ever was investigated that was on the outside of this car, meaning that it was as about six individuals in the car.
So, Big man, what you're saying is that the police never followed any other leads, and simply because of who you were, you became the focus of their investigation.
Up top, the focus of their investigation.
Well, you know, I'm going to say this to you, brother. That's a hell of a reputation. That's almost like taking a fox and putting them in the hen house and saying, all the chickens are missing. Did the fox eat all the hens? You follow where I'm going? And I don't know your reputation, but I'm saying that that's very odd because, I mean, and I think, Q, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but that's very strange that the police would only lock in on one person.
Right. That's why I'm asking that.
Okay.
Yes, and I would like to say this. You know, normally through any crime, I'm speaking in the terms of law because that's what it's based off of on this issue. Normally with any crime, no matter what situation occurs, if there's a death there on the scene, and anybody within that presence of that, meaning that they was in this car at that time, would have all the initial charges. One individual would never get the charges. Everyone amongst that car would have those same charges.
Well, big man, now listen. That depends on the nature of the case. Now, here's one thing that we all need to remember, is that cases each have an individual life to them. In other words, circumstances vary from case to case. So whereas a group of people may go out and commit, and someone in that group may commit a crime, that person may be charged with it, versus another set of circumstances where a group may go out and that group may be charged with that crime. So circumstances vary when it comes to that. Here's somebody else that wants to speak to you, too, as well. 909-749, you're on the air with the Don Adams Jr. Talk Show.
How you doing? You know, I just wanted to say one thing about what he's going through, because I do personally know someone that's in a very similar situation. And if there is all facts and truth behind what you're saying, man, may God be with you, because sometimes people are used as an example. And there is some cases when the police would just say, hey, you're here, you're the one, let's do it. It happens like that a lot out here in Cali. So if this is a truthful story, man, may God bless you with it. And that's all I want to say about that.
All right, we appreciate those comments.
If I can say something right now, Don, this is Carla B.
Okay.
Okay. And Big Man, I've listened to, you know, what you shared, and I've also had the opportunity to listen to you on previous shows with Don Adams. You know, just my take on the whole situation is that, you know, it was an unfortunate situation. Somebody died. What I think happened with your situation is that, yeah, they use you as a scapegoat. As you said, you were at the particular time, you were the main person, I guess, with the worst reputation ever. And I could definitely see them, you know, putting you in jail for involuntary manslaughter because your ex-girlfriend was in the car with you as well as some other people. And you guys were probably out doing, you know, gang activities because you stated that she was a gangbanger also. And unfortunately, she passed away, you know, behind the activities that you guys were doing in the street. So I could definitely see them putting, like, involuntary manslaughter on you, but not to put you in jail for life. I think maybe some of the reasons behind this is that they, you know, you prejudice, maybe I'm not saying this right correctly, but when you went in front of the judge, I don't know if you had an attorney or if it was a public defender or what have you, but just my opinion, I just feel like if you got on the stand and tried to, you know, speak for yourself, they weren't hearing it, period. They, you know what I'm saying, to them, you look like a gangbanger, you were a known gangbanger, and they wanted to put you down, period. And that's unfortunate that they didn't even really seek to find the true killer. But I just feel like they used your background, you know, against you in this. And at the end of the day, you know, I mean, I don't understand how the jury convicted you of, you know, of the murder and put you in jail for life. And I don't, you know, I'm not too versed in the criminal system as far as how it goes, as far as involuntary manslaughter, manslaughter, and what have you. But I do think that it was an unfortunate situation. I think that your past, you know, and probably your testimony, you know, helped to, you know, hang you, so to speak. And that's what's unfortunate about that.
You're right. His, not only that, to me, you know, your race actually was your also was another name in your conviction as well. But I also have another question. This is Q again. Besides your past, your gang ties, affiliations, and anything else bad, what was any other basis of them naming you as a prime suspect? What were the other anything else that was that would be a key a play to them naming you as suspect besides your past, you know?
It wouldn't basically be no other key because, as I stated, see, amongst this situation, they couldn't put anything towards me until they later found out who I was at the time. Like I said, they had the other guys apprehended just as I, you know, because, like I said, this was my girl. You know, being that we is a victim of the situation, you know, I went to get help and came back. I got pulled over right by the police at the moment
Big
of
man.
The scene going back to the scene. Uh-huh.
Big man, let me ask you a question, all right? Let me ask you a question. And this is kind of going to be what Q is asking, because Q, this is going to kind of piggyback off what Q asked you, but I'm going to make this question a little bit more complicated than what she mentioned, how she put it, because I have a law enforcement background and I am a former investigator. So let me just say this to you. When you went to trial, and you are always going to be made privy of the information that's going to be held against you, when you went to trial, Q, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to say Q, but when you went to trial, big man, number one, was there a weapon of caliber that was established as the weapon that took her life? Yes or no?
Oh, yeah, that's the weapon.
Okay.
Right there.
Okay, now, here's the other question. The weapon of caliber that was established, now, was this weapon recovered?
Yes, it was recovered. The weapon in the car, they recovered weapons from the car.
Okay, now, the weapon that was recovered, was this weapon found to be your weapon with your fingerprints?
No. Within that night, they did a swab test on me right there. Everything on me came back positive. They did a handprint test on the gun up at the crime lab. He was doing trial at the crime lab. You know, he went berserk to the point where the lawyer asked him, did my fingerprint appear on the gun? He was like, no, but he's the guilty party. You know what I'm saying?
But,
like,
but here's where I'm going. Was it ever established within your trial at any point in time that this weapon that was found to be the weapon, because they tested this gun, I'm assuming, with ballistics,
yeah,
and proved that this weapon was the one that was responsible for taking this young lady's life. Was it ever found at any point during your trial that you were the person to be in possession of this weapon during the time that this young lady was killed?
No. They spoke
okay.
on it during, hold up, let me say this. They spoke on it during the transcripts, or I would say statements of the co-defendants, but as they stood trial, they never put the possession of the gun in my hand.
Okay. Here's someone else at 229 that wants to talk to you, big man. 229-326, you're on the air with the Don Adams Jr. Talk Show. Go with your comments, please.
Actually, hello, I'm Wifey, Clifford Littman's wife, and I was just tuning in, listening to everything that you all were saying.
Good deal.
My husband neglected to also let you guys know that the lady that did the firearm examination on the weapon just last year, she just lost her job because she's been falsifying firearm documents. So, you know, I just wanted to kind of point that out to you.
Oh, absolutely. You know what? And I remember you talking to me about that before, which was also something that piqued my interest. Let me go ahead and share with the family who this woman is. What she is talking about is a woman who was a firearms examiner who up until the point that this took place in her career, she's very popular in the state of Georgia. She was used as a forensics examiner in firearms in a lot of GBI cases. For those of you who are not familiar, GBI is the Georgia Bureau of Investigation. Every state has a Bureau of Investigation. She was responsible for examining and testifying in many, many cases and identifying weapons and connecting these weapons to specific crimes, up to and including aggravated assault, murder cases, and other more serious cases other than those. And what was found was that, I think it was a year and a half to 2 years ago, was that this young lady that she is speaking of right now was found to have lied on several of the cases that she testified on in court. And when her testimony came out, they found out that she, not only did she lie and misrepresent, but what she had done was just straight up just falsified information. And her excuse for all of that was because she was overworked and she did not have help in working some of these cases. Now, with that being said, I want the family to understand this. Being a former law enforcement officer myself, anytime you have an officer of any magnitude that functions in the criminal justice system that has been found guilty of what I have just described to you, every case after that or prior to that, okay, every single case becomes questionable as to the legitimacy of what this officer did and did not do. In other words, in the system of law, you cannot have A if you skip. You cannot have B if you skipped over A to get B. And this is why I'm glad you called in to remind us of that. This is why, that's key in Big Man's case. It's because the person, the firearms examiner, okay, later on was proved to be discredited as far as her testimony in cases that she was responsible for. Now, with that being said, I want to open up the line. I want to ask Carla B, what's your opinion on that?
I'm sorry, I missed that last point. I'm going back and forth from a couple of different shows. Can you repeat that last part?
I was saying that the examiner, the firearms examiner in Big Man's case that testified in court to have him convicted, okay, testified on behalf of the prosecutors, was later found to be basically a liar. Found that she falsified information previously. And I explained to the family that in any jurisdiction, once an officer, I don't care if you've been an officer for 20 years, for 200 years. Once an officer has been found to have lied in court about a particular case or about anything as it pertains to convictions, every case thereafter becomes questionable, and
right,
all of
right,
those
right.
cases have to be reviewed, especially right. in a situation where you're talking about a firearms examiner, such as this lady. This
right,
case came
right.
about a year and a half ago, and this woman was found to have lied openly in court, willingly, about cases that she had testified on and had people sent to jail on.
Right.
So
right.
what do you think about that? And this
I mean,
is the
I
same, this is the same
I
examiner
think, right.
who testified in Big Man's case.
Okay, and I think this, definitely unfortunate. They should... he should definitely do something or get a new attorney so they can be able to dig deep into that so they can go ahead and open up his case. But, you know what I'm saying? I mean, I don't want to sound like hopeless or anything like that, so I'm definitely going to, keep positive with it. I do feel like it's, Big Man is in an unfortunate situation at this time because it's not fair for him to be in jail for life for something that he should be, have been accused of or charged with involuntary manslaughter. So I would say to him, definitely you want to, I don't know if you're already in the jail library doing your research, maybe putting some kind of fundraiser together with your family and your friends. Maybe even Don can come, come up with you to help, create some kind of fundraiser so you can get a new attorney. And so they can be able to dig deep into all that stuff because that's the only way it's going to happen. You know what I'm saying? Money talks. You can also go through, if you share your story with enough people, a lot of universities, students that are going, to be attorneys, they, have a lot of different advocacy programs for people who were wrongfully charged. And, you know, if you write letters to them and if they believe in your case, they could definitely fight for you. But something needs to happen, and this is a great forum to start. I don't want to, you know, necessarily, you know, continue to share some of my thoughts because they're not going to necessarily, you know, help your situation. So with that, I'm you know, I'm just going to be quiet, and I do wish you all the best.
All right. Let me, Q, I know you have some comments on that as well, Q. I can feel your vibe over there. But before I let you do that, Q, I want to say this to the family. I want to put some information out there because y'all know I love statistics. And I want to say this, and then Q, as soon as I'm done with these statistics, I want to hear your comments on this, on what I just asked Carla B. For those of you who don't believe that false convictions can happen, let me say this, and this is what I'm reading. Y'all can go to the Innocence Project. That's www.innocenceproject. You can pull up information. I'm pulling up now. Races of the 255 exonerees since this project began, 151 of them have been African-Americans. Okay? Now, people say that white folks have it easy. 77 of them have been Caucasians. 21 of them have been Latinos. Only 2 have been Asian Americans, and 4 have been with races unknown. Now, I'm going to say those numbers one more time. 151 of them have been African Americans. 77 of them have been Caucasian. 21 of them have been Latinos, and 2 have been Asian Americans. 4 races have not been, their races have not been determined. And I say that to say this to you, family. False convictions happen. And at the end of the day, whether a big man is right or whether he's wrong, here's my point. At the end of the day, if you felt like you were innocent and you were passionate enough about it, wouldn't you want someone else to listen to you? So I say that to say this. Go ahead with your comment, Q.
Well, as far as the lady, I don't know who she is, but I feel that, you know, as a peace officer, a sworn peace officer, I'm assuming that she is some kind of officer, she was sworn in to uphold the law, and she has a greater obligation to uphold the law. And for her to blatantly just lie, just outright lie, I feel that she should be taken to trial and she should be charged with perjury. You know, because
I think her ass should be harsh whipped.
You know, somebody else's life that she's messing with, you know, and you know, the things that he has to endure in the prisons, you know, a lot of us don't know the things that you have to. You have to kind of, from what I understand, sleep with one eye open. You know, you can't trust anybody. You know, your life is always in danger, you know. For her, you know, to do something like that, she really, I mean, just beyond a shame, you know. It's ridiculous. She should go to jail for real. That's how I feel, you know, because for, you know, this man to have to endure, and I'm not saying that some of the things that happened to him, he did not bring upon himself, because, you know, a lot of things that you bring upon yourself, you have to actually look at, you know, it'll come back to haunt you. You know, your past comes back to haunt you. Those skeletons, you know, they still have some meat on the bone, you know, so it comes back to haunt you. But for her just to outright lie like that, just to get a conviction, whatever under her belt, whatever other medal, trophy, or high five, or pat on the back, or promotion, or whatever she thought she was getting, that was wrong, you know. And I truly apologize, and my heart goes out to you.
Quick question for Don and for Big Man. Now, this particular lady, what you read, Don, that wasn't Big Man's case. That was something just recently happened a year ago. And what you're stating is that since...
He was speaking in terms of, no, it's not my case that she actually lied in. But see, once that you're... See, being like the miss that spoke said, once you're sworn in, you're to fulfill that duty. So you can't lie on one case and all
know,
the rest don't can't be checked.
Hold on, big man. Let her finish that question, big man.
Okay.
No, I was just. Yeah, I think he answered it because you know my basically the question was I just wanted some clarity on if she that case a year ago was that big man's case or somebody else's. I understand now that was somebody else's and they want her to be able to, you know, someone to be able to go back and open up all her other cases. But you know what? They're not going to do that, you know, because they look at it, they look, okay, they say, okay, all these, you know, convicted criminals, You know, most of them probably already had a record or whatever.
Well, no, wait a minute, Carla. I'm going to say this to you now, and I'll say this to you. There is a strong possibility that they will do that, and I'll say this because I know that you probably don't know what this procedure is. And this is for those family that's out there that are dealing with this particular set of circumstances. Anytime you have an investigator, a forensics investigator, or anyone that's connected with your case that has you have found that has lied in any capacity in court, your case is reviewable. But here's the trick, is that you have to have an attorney who is going to be willing to go to court, file an appeal, and go and argue your case. A lot of times what happens is these things cost money, and that's why it doesn't happen as often. Because a lot of those folks that are in prison are destitute. They're in prison. They don't have an income. And 9 out of 10 times, they don't have a family that's out there that has the money and who's able to fight for them. And that's why the Georgia Court of Appeals comes into play. But here's the thing. Those appeals attorneys, they fit right along with the defender's office, the public defender's office, because those attorneys are not paid attorneys. They're not getting money in their pockets. They're often overworked, underpaid, and really, to be honest with your family, they don't give a shit. So at the end of the day, unless you have someone in your family who has a wad full of money and they're able to go and stand up and say, you know what, I'm going to fight for you because I love you, and they have the money to pay an attorney to file an appeal in your specific case, it won't happen.
I got a question for Big Man, if I can ask him this question, in regards to his girlfriend being killed. What kind of relationship, if any, do you have with her family, and how do they feel about you being in jail for life?
Well, that's a good question. Point of that, you know, in the beginning, you know, everything was cool, but, you know, dealing with the family, the district attorney going to play her part and speak things in the ear of these people, you know what I'm saying? So at the moment, I wouldn't say that it's on shaky ground. It's just not all the way towards my corner because they lost someone, just like, you know, she's not there with them right now, just as I'm not there with my family, you know. So that'll play more of a part than what's really going on, you know.
So people
on emotions.
So, Big Man, so it's fair to say this, and I'm going to help the answer to this question a little bit. So it's fair to say this. Right now, her family hates you.
I wouldn't say hate me, you know what I'm saying, because I deal with...
They hold you responsible directly for what happened to her.
You know what I'm saying, because, you know, but I do communicate with her daughter. You know, the youngest one at the time during our relationship that was around, I do communicate with her, you know. But doing towards, like, mother or something of that nature, you know what I'm saying? You know, she looked at it being that it's more my responsibility because we was together at that time.
All right, family, stand by. We're going to take a commercial break when I have some advertisement that I need to put out there. We've got to pay the bill. You're listening to the Don Adams Jr. Talk Show, and for those of you who are waiting to call in, the lines are packed, and I know you're out there. I'm going to put the number out there for you to give us a call so you can talk with Big Man. But before we do that, I'm going to take us to a commercial break, and when we come back, we'll go ahead and put that information out there. We're talking to Big Man, brother who's currently incarcerated under what he believes is a wrongful conviction. And so far, family, keeping score, he might be 1-0. I'll be right back, family. Stick with us on the Don Adams Jr. Talk Show.
Have you been wishing for an alternative night to get all dressed up and have a good time?
Club Revolution, 1327 West Colton Avenue, Redlands, California, 92374. Live music. Cover charge is $10, VIP $25, 21 and over. Dress code, dress to impress. No tennis shoes, no baseball cap, no tees. For the grown and sexy. Come on, California. Location, Club Revolution, July 28th, 8 p.m. to 2 a.m. Come on, y'all, let's get in the game. Hit us up, getinthegame.webs.com. All right? This has been brought to you by EOTM Radio.
Urban Literary Review, where literature and urban meet. Hosted weekly by Tia from DC Bookman and Martin from Culture First. Urban Literary Review comes on Blog Talk Radio. That's www.blogtalkradio.com/Urban Literary Review. Urban Literary Review comes on twice a week, Tuesdays and Thursdays at 7 p.m. Our mission is to shine a positive light on the urban literary industry by promoting literature and discussing issues that are pertinent to the growth of the industry. In addition to being an online radio show, Urban Literary Review also provides authors with promotion to over 15,000 African-American readers for only $99 per month. So don't forget to listen and tune in each week, every Tuesday and Thursday at 7 p.m. on blogtalkradio.com/Urban Literary Review. Or check us out for more information at www.myspace.com/Urban.
Tumbling Dice.
That's right.
Seven on a day.
In the morning and face the sunlight, you bounce on my love and it's airtight. Sometimes I'm curious on how you feel when you're screaming out my name. Is it really for reality? Originality, my mentality. Explore every possibility. Let's get down. Shorty, time will reveal. The only true test is pain. You know the deal. Love appears like bright lights in the night. Hold me down. I don't know, but oh, I like the sound. You are amazing.
welcome back, family, to another edition of the Don Adams Jr. Talk Show. Today, tonight, family, we're talking about a man who believes he's falsely convicted, a man living with a false conviction. Very serious topic, family. You know, big man, we brought him on board, give his story, put it out there. And I want to put some more information out there. And for those of you who have not been tuned into the show as of yet, I'm not going to recap because, I want to utilize most of the time that we have. Y'all know I love statistics. But I want to put some information out there. And this is to support, I guess, to kind of, you know, let folks know why it is that I felt that this show was as important as I think it is. You know, there's a lot of, let me give these numbers again. Of the innocent, of the people that have been exonerated in the United States as of today, and I don't have a specific date as to when they started keeping track of this, but 151 of them have been African Americans, 77 of them have been Caucasians, 21 have been Latinos, 2 have been Asian Americans, okay, 4 their race has not been unknown. Let's just say it like this. But here's something that I think you all should realize is what happens. Some of the leading causes of wrongful convictions have to do with, number one, eyewitness misidentification testimony, when someone thinks that they saw something they didn't see. Unvalidated or improper forensic science. Okay? That means that somebody didn't follow the chain of command. Or they didn't handle the evidence correctly. And that, as a result, ended up with someone being convicted. Okay? These things do happen, family. False confessions or incriminating statements. Incriminating statements is huge, family, because I want you all to understand this. Every single person in the United States of America, whether you are a legal citizen or not, has the ability or should have the right or has the right to exercise the Fifth Amendment, which means you have the right to remain silent so that nothing you say can in any way be used against you. Not in Big Man's case, but in cases, in any interaction that you have with the police, it's important for you to understand one thing, family, that you have the right to remain silent. I don't care if it's just a traffic ticket. If a police officer asks you, have you been drinking tonight, exercise your Fifth Amendment right. If he asks you where you're going, exercise your Fifth Amendment right. These rights are very important because what I just said to you was false confessions and incriminating in the mind of the police officer. Okay? In the mind of a police officer, when you make a statement that he feels, not you, but he feels incriminates you, this is where you're going to end up. Behind bars. Because 9 out of 10 times you're going to take you to jail. Then you have to go through the process of proving yourself innocent. Now, snitches. That's another one. Snitches are those folks that tell. Now, I know that they're coming out with this don't snitch campaign or this snitch campaign, don't be afraid to tell campaign. But you know what? Here's the tragedy to all that. When they start rewarding people for snitching or telling on other people, how many times is it going to come about where someone has told on you or snitched on you and it was misinformation? Because when you're getting paid, economic times being as hard as they are, who gives a damn whether or not, you know, hey, it's accurate or inaccurate? Because I'm going to tell you right now, the prosecutor doesn't care. He's supposed to care, but the prosecutor doesn't care. So with that being said, you know, I'm going to open up the line again for Q. I know you have some comments that you want to put out there, Q. Go with it, baby.
As far as comments, actually, I had another question, if that would be possible.
Yes, go ahead, sweetie.
I just wanted to know what efforts are being made by you or from, you know, your attorney to either work on getting you out or getting another trial.
I haven't obtained an attorney, you know, because myself, I see it's no different from just the present is known. I see myself to where I've grown with this situation. Man, you know, I've been incarcerated 11 years and a half right now. So I've went into this situation myself as to check things out and have dealt with lawyers just on information as, you know, writing them, talking to them on the point of pushing things their way and getting their, you know, objective on it, and, you know, and it's all accuracy, and which I've researched and which I've got, you know. So I put it more to the point. I went pro se
and doing certain things with this case because of the situation at hand. I know that being that, you know, as you stated earlier, she should be put in jail, you know, and other officials may not feel that way, meaning that, you know, I look at it towards this case, a certain individual has to walk with this and be no holds barred when you go towards, when you push this case. But mind you not, as I say, I have a motion right now pending in the Middle District Federal Court among two
So Q, so big man, wait, hold on, Q. I want to make sure your question was answered first. So Q,
okay.
I mean, big man.
Okay.
So big man, what you're saying is that you are currently handling your own appeals and your own legal efforts.
I've been doing my own legal efforts for several years now on the pro.
Okay.
You know,
okay.
You know.
All right. Go ahead, Q.
I mean, well, just in case, you know, anybody else wants to know, it, you know, no question I feel is silly, but I just want to know, you know, how are you? I mean, really, how are you as far as your mental state? Because I know this is probably your worst nightmare. It will be anybody's worst nightmare.
I would say that's a good question, too, Q, because I would state this, you know what I'm saying? I'm not going to sit here and say Big Man was a saint in its entirety. But I can say within this, all this, you know, just as the things the district attorney did to put me in here, you know, away from my loved ones and all, during this situation, you know, I didn't really just sit back. I learned not to sit back and lean on the problem. My thing was to attack myself and Carla said, you know, the lifestyle that I was living, it prompts certain situations, and I understood that all this came from that, whether I was innocent or guilty. So I became more conscious of dealing with myself first before I attacked the case to get the understanding of who Mr. Big Man was in his entirety before I present myself as well as this case back to the people which, you know, presented it to me. You know, so from the jump, you're going to look at me like she said, if I sat on this stand earlier, you know, you look at me as a gangbanger. But beyond the status of, you know, my demeanor, you know what I'm saying, check out the person who I've become, you know, the character in this person, the calm, cool spirit of this person, you know, one that's on more of a positive note, you know. And I would say, because, you know, I believe wholeheartedly in, God of the universe, that this has been a bad effort because within itself, Mr. Big Man has helped himself by conquering himself. You know what I'm saying? Not a thing is about it, you know, because I know I will be walking within those grounds, maybe even meeting you all within a couple, whoever knows, you know, months, something of that nature, to the point that, you know.
Big Man, let me put something else out there for the family since you're at that point. I know earlier in the show, man, you mentioned that the elements of your crime were not there. Now, everyone, and I'm putting this information out there for those of you who are legal savvy and for those of you who are not. For those of you who are not legal savvy, elements of a crime are the standards to which the prosecutor has to reach up and prove that beyond a reasonable doubt you committed this crime. And this is what he was speaking on earlier when he mentioned that, hey, at the end of the day, there was no intent, because he kept saying that there was no intent. Now, we don't know for certain, because we haven't clarified that on this show, as to whether or not that weapon that was responsible for this young lady's demise was actually his weapon, unless he wants to clear that up. We don't know that. But what I think he was alluding to was the fact that a jury, in any case, must be convinced beyond a reasonable doubt that the defendant has committed each element of a particular crime charged during before they can reach a verdict of not guilty, of a verdict of guilty. Now, with that being said, some of you may say, what are elements and what do these elements mean? Well, let me give you the four elements of a crime. A jury, before they can decide that you are guilty of a crime, must decide mental state, which is legally termed as mens rea, which refers to the criminal's or the person accused's state of mind. They must also determine actus reus, which is his conduct, which means that, hey, this guy acted unlawfully and with omission, acted either unlawfully or by omission and caused the death of this person. The third element is concurrence. In general, mens reas and actus reas must occur at the same time, which establishes concurrence. And the final one is causation. Causation must be proved. In other words, for example, a homicide requires a killing. Aggravated battery requires a serious bodily injury. And without this outcome, no crime would have been committed. In other words, causation meaning, guess what? Your actions caused this. And if had you not committed these actions, then this outcome would not have been achieved. So I hope I explained it to those of you who do not understand what elements of a crime are. And this is what Big Man was saying, is that in his case, the elements of the crime could not have been there because he did not have the intent to do or to commit this crime, which in some cases prosecutors are allowed to skip over some of these requirements. Now, I say that to say this, that in itself is wrong, because it is the judge and the prosecutor's duty to ensure that all of those elements are reached in each and every criminal trial that they approach. Now, with that being said, Carla, I know you have some comments. What are they?
Actually, I don't right now.
Okay.
I'm just listening, that's all. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Q, what's up?
Same thing, just kind of listening in, trying to let things sink in my head about this.
Okay, 909-749. I know you have some comments. You're on the line. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm still on the line, man, and I'm just in full agreement with what you're saying. I'm very impressed. This show has been very knowledgeable for me, and I didn't know things like this were still happening. I know I've heard about it, and I hope that it, you know, everything works out in your favor, sir. Only if you're you know, innocent in this, of course. But I'm just fascinated and almost speechless, like Carla B and Queen and Q. I'm just speechless. This is amazing, and it's a wonderful show, man. And God bless you guys.
Okay.
I have a question real fast for Big Man.
All right.
Big Man, do you know of any efforts on from anyone that's trying to rectify the situation as far, well, not even rectify, but as far as the lady who, what was she called, the gun examiner, that lied on you, are there anything that's going to happen to her or what the deal is with that?
Yeah, she's been fired.
Yeah. Okay.
Go ahead, Big
if
Man.
Fired, then why did they explain to you why?
See, I understand where you're getting at, Carla. Let me break it down to you. Like, you know,
that's
Don Fair.
That's Q. That's not Carla.
Q.
Q. Let me break it down to you. See, the elements of this, meaning what you're saying about the woman being fired, see, they even in the hands of the incarcerated ones. See, once you're convicted, they don't care. You got to fight this situation. So, like you say, financials and everything plays a certain part. But if no one speaks on it from your ass state, no one cares. That's the thing about it. You know, so the courts don't care if, okay, she was okay, she lied on this case. And within itself is wrong. And when it's itself, any case where she's still trial it, we go back. But they leave that for the incarcerated minds to do. All that work has to come in from them, like Don said earlier, about getting a lawyer or, you know, filing motions within the court, speaking that, okay, this person sat in within my trial and, you know, she admitted to her wrongs within here. I needed to be checked out. They leave all that, you know, relied on the convicted one. You know, see, being that it's pointed that way, you and like Don said earlier, you don't see, it goes to the fact that you don't see as many people, because a lot of times the guys that be incarcerated don't pay them much attention to push back, because they don't have enough help to do that. You know, the ears to them is like deaf out there in that world, you know, to a lot of people, because once a person is in cage, the majority think you already are guilty of what.
Well, you know what? I'm going to say this, Big Man. Once you've been convicted of a crime and once you've been released, society doesn't give a shit about you. So let alone the fact that you're still serving time for this crime, they really don't give a shit about you, because people tend to believe this, that prosecutors and police officers are doing their jobs diligently. Family, that's not true. And I'm telling you right now that these people are human just like you do. If you decided you want to take a shortcut on changing the oil on your car, well, I can make it one more week without my oil being changed, and all of a sudden your engine goes out. Well, they do the same thing. Well, I can make this case and not worry about necessarily proving that this is what it is. They do the same exact thing. Here's where I'm going with this, family. Counties and these jurisdictions that allow these prosecutors to do the things that they do should be held accountable. Here in Atlanta recently, there was a woman who was locked up and put in jail and charged with disorderly conduct because she did not want to move off of a sidewalk. Actually, what she did was she asked the police officer, excuse me, officer, Why am I being made to leave the sidewalk and it's a public place? The officer said, to hell with you, I'm locking you up. Well, she got $20,000 out of there because witnesses stepped up and said, you know what, she did nothing wrong. Here is another case. A woman, a white lady here in Georgia, was accused of 22 counts of child molestation. 22 counts. It was found that the prosecutors in her case used witnesses that were not qualified to be experts to testify on behalf of these children that she supposedly molested to seek a conviction on her. She is currently suing the state for the money that she has lost for her defense. So what am I saying, family? A lot of people think that because prosecutors have what's called autonomy. Y'all know what autonomy is? Well, let me explain to you what autonomy is. Autonomy is that little old cliche in the law that allows prosecutors to prosecute people like you and I relentlessly, regardless of how little or how much evidence exists in your case. Because the law says we want our prosecutors to go after you regardless of what is or isn't there. And they have given them this. Police officers act under what's called colors of the law. In other words, when they go to court, they can say, I locked you up, but oops, I did it because I was acting as a police officer at the time. I believe that this is what took place. Well, here's the thing to it, family. If you can in turn go to court and say, you know what, you shouldn't have locked me up. But for y'all that are listening, understand me clearly, you have to go to federal court, not state court, for this part that I'm giving you right here. If you can go to federal court and say, you know what, and anybody can file anything in federal court, and get a jury to listen to it, because that's what court is about. It's to listen to the sides that are involved and for the jury to decide who's right and who's wrong. If you feel like you've been wrongfully arrested, wrongfully convicted, you go to federal court and you file the proper paperwork and you go to court and you say, you know what, you had no business arresting me. And you let a jury decide, just like they tried to hang your ass in state court. And if that jury comes back and says, you know what, they shouldn't have arrested you, guess what? That little clause that I just mentioned, that has to do with autonomy, it has to do with colors of the law, it doesn't mean squat. Because guess what? The jury in a federal court is going to overrule whatever the state said. Because federal court supersedes state court. So it's important for everybody to understand that. Prosecutors and police officers do what they do because not many people know and understand that, guess what? Even if they do make a mistake and lock you up and put you in jail, even if they do secure a conviction on you, guess what? There is, of course, a reprisal. And that's what my point is. Any comments on that, ladies and gentlemen?
You know what? One thing that I was going to ask, because I don't know what his race was, it kind of seems. I was wondering, the people who convicted you, the jury who convicted you, if I may, what race were they?
You had black and you had majority white, though. So.
Was it all like one way? Was it everybody agreed, or was it some people that didn't agree?
My thing was this right here, because the appeal attorney told me afterwards that he interviewed some of the jurors. All was undecided. It's more like, you know, like Don said earlier, it's a rush thing. You know, you got everyday people doing something that they don't do, and then they have other things that you're not a standard in their life to say, okay, I want to spend my time right here dealing with your situation. You know, so. You know, being that they was all undecided, you know, they was rushed to make a verdict. Okay, I'm going to just go ahead and do this, you know, and get on, because like I said, you know, the appeal attorney spoke to some of the jurors, and that was let known to him from the jury's mouth within itself, you know.
Interesting.
Yeah, if I may,
hello?
Don, if I may, you know, sometimes I feel that a lot of times the public also don't care because a lot of times it's always said that this is on taxpayers' dollars. And, you know, a lot of people are looking at that. You know, well, I'm paying for this. We need to hurry up and have a speedy trial. You know, they're always wanting a speedy trial, you know, without, you know, the necessary or the proper documentation getting out, you know, so that the jury can make an informed decision. So that's just
You're absolutely correct, Q. You know what? We got another call on the line for you, too, big man. 770-367, you're on the air with the Don Adams Jr. Talk Show. Go with your comments, please. 770? Oh, actually, all right. 951, you're on the air with the Don Adams Jr. Talk Show. Go with your comments, please. Okay. All right. We're losing callers just as quick as we're getting them. Caller B, you got a comment on any of that stuff we just mentioned?
Well, great stuff. You love putting people on the spot, don't you? Can't get a caller for me.
You know, I am not sure you know at least. I ain't sure you know terribly. None.
But
none.
Well, no, what I want to say is, you know, if what you're saying is true today, big man, then definitely I would, you know, tell you to get your butt into that law library as much as you can. And I think that you've created, like, some kind of camaraderie-ship with Don EOTM Adams, and as you see, when he's passionate about something, he definitely, you know, does a lot of research. I know already on his behalf that he's already done some stuff for you as far as making phone calls, you know, touching bases with district attorney's office and this and that. So you got somebody definitely that'll be on your team 100%. You know, if you're saying what you're saying, and if that's true, I know he'll be behind you 100%. So one thing I got, and this is the last thing I'll say tonight, is definitely keep your head up. I'm not judging you, and I don't feel like no one should, you know, judge you for, you know, what you've done in the past. I think that you've already kind of made amends with that within yourself and the victim family and your family, and you just want to move forward, and you want some kind of life for yourself, and I definitely want that for you as well. So good luck with your fight.
Interesting. You know what? I said something at the beginning of the show, and it was a quote, and I want to repeat this quote because I think it's important for us to understand and to digest this quote. Now, whether you want to accept it or not, it's your personal choice. But we all have strength enough to endure the misfortunes of others. In other words, it's always easy to stand on the outside of the fence and say, ooh, this is what you could have, should have, would have done. This is what But at the end of the day, guess what? When it comes to you making that journey, how are you going to fare with the weather on that journey? Now, I say that to say this, big man, do you have any comments on that particular quote?
Saying that how people view the situation, being that they could be in this situation?
Basically this. All right, let me see if I can say it another way. At the end of the day, it's always easier for someone to have a lot of energy, a lot of comments, and a lot of let's go get it done when they're not involved in it directly. But when it comes times for you to put the gloves on and for you to walk the walk, because in your situation, brother, you are walking the walk. I'm not walking this walk with you. And neither is anyone else on this panel or on this show walking this walk with you. So my comment, or actually my question for you is, how do you feel about that? Because like I said when I put this show out there, if it was you, not meaning you, big man, but if it was Carla B., if it was Q, if it was some of you listeners that are out there, would you not want someone to listen to you? Would you not, even whether you were wrong or whether you were right, would you not want a voice, someone to at least give you the opportunity to be heard? So, with that being said, how do you feel about that comment or that quote?
Oh, yes, I feel, you know, wholeheartedly that within myself, just like you said, I'm on this journey, and so, you know, I'm thankful to the Don Adams Show, EOTM, that my voice can be heard upon this situation with this false conviction. Just let it be known that it's injustice, and it still stands, like the caller stated on the line, that they didn't know that that still goes on, and it's plenty of it. Like you said, it's 151. You count one more to it, it's 152 false convictions with myself. You know, that's how I look at the situation. And to anyone else, you know, being in a situation, you know, that is not, you know, a righteous one, you know, they would look at it like they would ask for help themselves, because reaching out is the key to anything, you know. And doing this situation right here, that's basically what Mr. Big Man is doing.
Right.
Speaking out, letting it be known, because just as I'm speaking it today, a crime could be happening today and a person could be falsely convicted today, you know.
Right. Well, if I can just give you some advice. And this is just me, you know, just listening to some of the past shows that you've done, and then listening to you on this show tonight. You seem like you've learned a lot since you've been in jail, and I know you've been there for over a decade already. But just, I mean, I've listened to you on his shows, and Don talks about a lot of different range of topics, be it politics and social issues, and just my opinion, listening to you on the show the other day when we were talking about pants sagging and stuff, and how you were, you know, putting out there like, it, you know, it's okay for guys to be able to do wear their pants sagging, you know, for whatever reason. That's your opinion. But I think that if you're trying to do something with your case, so you have to kind of step yourself away from the old you, the gangbanger you, the pants sagging you, and you have to create a new image. And I guess I'm looking at it in a, like a marketing, because I do public relations. So, you know what I'm saying, we market and we brand, you know, our people. We create a brand for them. And so if you're trying to put a positive image out there about yourself, then what you really need to do is start maybe, you know, advising, you know, those young guys that know you don't want, you don't need to wear your pants sagging because you're being stereotyped. You don't want to be stereotyped, because I believe that stereotype that, I mean, they stereotype you when you were in court. You know what I'm saying, for that, and that's probably why they gave you that that harsher sentence. So you need to really start speaking out against stuff like that, so young men could, you know what I'm saying, maybe start making some better decisions, and I think that'll help with your fight.
Yeah,
you know, I like to say this, caller, in return to that, you know, in my situation towards the, you know, situation with the gangbang, you know. It was an experience of life during that time, and as I was speaking towards the other show the other night, you know, it's not that I promote what a youngster may do or something of that nature, because I came from that. It's the thing that I understand the situation at hand, so I know that, you know, through certain circumstances, you know, that's not proper, you know. So,
right.
You know, I promote that to
well,
youngsters.
Well, big man, you know something, big man? I'm going to say this. And I want to say this to you, okay? And then I want your wife to comment on this, because I know your wife is on the line. But I'm going to say this to you, big man. That was what you just mentioned was exactly what my point is, that certain things belong in certain situations.
Yeah.
And for you personally, because of the fact that now your story is out there, now whether you know it or realize it or not, people are listening, and your story is out there. So my challenge to you, man, as a brother, as a black man, as an inmate, or however you, as another man, however you want to receive this, my challenge to you is, from now on, every time you open your mouth, whether it be on my show, whether it be on Say Two show, whether it be on any show that you can get your voice on, that you step your game up, man. Because I'm going to tell you something, right now, people don't have an image of you. All they have is a voice of you. And your voice of you is what's going to form their opinion of you. Now, that is the most powerful piece of knowledge that I can give you for where you sit right now. Now, I'm going to let your wife comment on that. What do you have to say about that?
All I have to say is that I agree totally on the behalf of what Carla has spoken upon, and I can understand my husband and the background that he's come from. He's progressed through this journey, you know, so, you know, we just going to have to keep our heads up. You know, and it's time, this situation has been long overdue, and I appreciate the efforts that you all have taken to take out the time to listen to his story and the support that you all have given him, and we will just continue on. That's all I have to say about it.
Okay. Now, big man, what you think about the comment that I just made, brother? What you think about that, what I just mentioned?
Oh, what you just mentioned, you know, I thank you for that sound advice, you know, but I know within itself, just as you know what I'm saying, like we talked earlier, you know, I don't hold anything back, you know what I'm saying? So I speak in terms of, you know, for the world within itself, me even being in this situation, because I know another black brother or the white or man, anybody could be in a situation, you know what I'm saying? So I don't look, me, I can't, like, you know, like I said, conquer myself. I came to the realization that if I'm going to be, you know what I'm saying, myself and look at things on the whole, which I know a lot of people don't. You know, I can't be prejudiced to no situation, you know, even from the situation that I came from. You see what I'm saying? So I understand that, being that I was more prejudiced of in a situation, being that I'm looking forward out of that situation. You know what I'm saying? That, you know, like if she was speaking towards the pandemic and stuff of that nature, you know, like I stated, you know, that's more appropriate and proper situation. You know what I'm saying? But I want to say this, though. The thing is right here, though, with me, and generally me, when you're talking about Mr. Big Man and his entirety itself, you know, I speak in positivity, you know, for, you know, to motivate myself as well as youngsters that walking in that footprint, you know what I'm saying, of that situation. And then I know, I understand being, when you're trying to speak with people and come from where you come from, you have to give them, you know, so I know how to, you know, I would say, you know, talk with these people. to go. I have to go that way to lead someone. You can't just say this and lead and say pull them up, because that's what they're content with at that moment.
Well, you know what, big man? Let me say this to you, and I applaud and I appreciate your comments, but I want to be very specific when I address this to you. I didn't mean that to say that you should change anything about who you are. I just meant that to say that you should just be aware of how your comments come across. One thing I like about you is this. I feel that you keep it real. Keep keeping it real. Put your heart into what you're doing. And don't ever change that. Because that's the one thing that you have, as far as I'm concerned, that brought you to the table with me. So I'm going to be open about that. Now, with that being said, I want to share some things with the family. Now, there are 34 states that have had to go back and exonerate people. I'm not going to give all of the states, but I'm going to give the big states. In the state of New York, there have been 27 exonerations. Compensation? Yes. They've been paid for it. DNA? Yes. It was a DNA type situation. Now, Texas, there have been 40 exonerations. Compensation? Absolutely. DNA? Yes. Played a part in it. Okay? Florida, there have been 12. Exoneration. Compensation? Yes. DNA law? Yes. Absolutely played a part in it. Now, in Illinois, there have been 29 exonerations. Now, family, I'm putting these numbers out here to let you know this. Now, this is not in support of or against Big Man, but this is to let you know, you know what? At the end of the day, exonerations do happen. And at the end of the day, guess what, family? The system is not infallible like we would like to believe that it is. At the end of the day, when somebody raises their voice and says, hey, I need to be heard, I think like this. As a public and as a society, we owe it to that person to let them be heard. Even if they're wrong, let them be heard. That is the purpose of the judicial system. That is the purpose of a jury trial, a judge, and supposedly a prosecutor who's out for the right thing. Q, you got any comments on that?
Well, I actually have a question for you, if you can, for maybe, you know, the listeners might not know, because I don't know. If you can just give us a little bit of insight. What are the legal ramifications? Because I'm sure, you know, Big Man's wife has gone through hell and high water over this, the things that he has to deal with as well. But what are the legal obligations, or what someone can seek if they're done wrong by the court systems, or by, like, what happened with him? This lady outright lied, and she admitted it, and she got fired. You know, what
okay.
has he done before that? Yeah.
That's a great question. You know, what happens is this. In the state of Illinois, there was a case where a prosecutor was found to be egregiously aggressive in seeking a conviction in a murder case. That prosecutor was fired, and he was later disbarred, but he didn't face any jail time. There was a case in North Carolina where there were four youths who were rich white youths. And this, let me tell y'all something, family. This is not about white or black. I want to put that out there and be very clear. That's why it was important for me to put those numbers out there. 77 Caucasians and 151 African Americans. That means that outside of African Americans, guess what? The Caucasian group are number two when it comes to convictions and false convictions. Now, there were four white kids in North Carolina who were falsely accused of raping somebody. The DA knew that this woman had changed her story and that there was no physical evidence that these men had committed this rape, but yet still they wanted to prosecute them. That prosecutor later went to jail for 24 hours. He lost his job and he was disbarred. Okay? To make it plain and simple, it is so rare, few and between, that prosecutors who do and investigators who do things like this are brought to justice themselves. The system usually looks at it and says, well, they maybe were overworked, or maybe they had a lot of this, a lot of that going on, but it's a bunch of baloney. At the end of the day, not a lot happens. And like I said earlier, it depends on, like, in Big Man's case or in other people's cases. When you know beyond a reasonable doubt that you have been falsely convicted, it is typically up to the defendant to come up with the money, the financial means, unless you got a family who's on the outside who's willing to fight for you, to go and present your case to an appeals court. And then once you win, in most cases, once these people are freed and exonerated, they don't even want to see the court system no more because so much of their life has been taken from them. But unless they feel like, you know what, I want justice, and they go after these people that had them falsely convicted, there is nothing that's going to be done about it. Nothing at all. Okay? Nothing at all is going to be done about it. Did I ask you a question, Q?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
You did.
Big man,
oh,
what
no,
you got?
No.
Yeah, go ahead.
I got a piece that I wrote for this situation.
I figured
like,
you did.
The name of this piece, I would like to put it out there. You know, it's not in my latest reality portrait book that is out there on the market right now. Street Gangsters, your OG rated Lords to Die For by Mr. Big Man. You can check it out at Amazon.com, www.realstreetlitpub.com.
All right, Big Man, before you go, we got 6 minutes left in the show, so I'm gonna give you 1 minute to do it, then we're going to give our guests some final comments on this situation, then we're going to wrap it up. So you got 1 minute, brother. Go with it.
Okay, the truth told from a G-Soul. Being a passenger, I did get hit. But when gangsters love matter, we splatter within a man's face. Focus helped me focus to perceive any case. I desire to prevail, never destined to fail. The solid strength of the gangster in me, patched my wound. The value of my ambition, executed the man I am, to do what I do. For the gangster I am, applies recognition to what I need, only God knew what my life would receive. After I wiped the blood out my eyes, forgive me, love, for my heart was too street to cry. I knew you just as you knew I. No one understands what it takes for me to daily get by. Damn, all those bullets, I wonder why I didn't die. Back then, during my dismissing of sin, I was moving too fast to actuate my future. Since I'm now at a penal pace, I'm in freedom motion constructing my future. Call me a fool for standing by your side, but who knew better than I? The truth told, the gangsters in you was always down to ride. Tragedy has no mercy, so I ask not why. The streets curse me. Conceiving a gift, which I believe that will help me achieve, now I'm poetically perfecting my craft. This is the declaration of emotions of a successful aftermath. Feel the vibrations of my gangster soul, the truth told. I don't regret my life being drenched in street scold. For this pain can't be rest from my ghetto mold. My life has upheld the worst of storm. I'm forever strong. By the script of the real man I be, I'll be damned if I fold. I continue to uphold myself. But this is the truth told from the depth of a gangster soul. That's that piece.
Good job, Reed. Good job, Big Man. Good shot.
Get him.
All right, Q, we're going to start with you first, sweetie. Any final comments on tonight's topic?
Basically, just for Big Man, his wife, I just want to tell you from my heart, from one individual to another, you know, you just keep fighting and be, you know, the face of, to the faceless that's locked away, you know, because you may be that individual that changes the legal wrongs that's done to people. That's all I want to say. Just keep fighting.
All right, Carla B.
Hey, just want to say definitely another great show, another great Don EOTM Adams production. Big Adams, definitely be encouraged, be inspired. Seems like you have a great wife that is standing behind you 100%, so, and that's a beautiful thing in itself. So just keep your head up and keep inspired and just keep trying to educate yourself.
Thank you.
Okay, sounds good. All right, 909, I think that's Mocha D. Mocha D, you got a final comment for us?
Yes, and I appreciate that. I just wanted to say, you know, like Carla B was saying, just stay encouraged and know since the beginning of time that fair trials has been just a matter of another man's hands. So you use every moment, whether you got to go back up in the system or not, just use every moment as a time to uplift somebody else's spirit and look at it like another job and another mission to make you even a better man.
Okay. Sounds good. Sounds positive. All right, I'm going to let your wife say some final comments. I know she said she didn't have anything else to say, but I want her to say some final comments if she wouldn't mind. I know you still – there you go, babe.
I appreciate all the support once again, and I like to say this. This is a little short, brief story. As I was standing in line one day going to visit my husband, a white guy. Like you said, it's not a black and white thing. The guy was standing behind me. He told me, he said, you know what? I always thought that everybody that's incarcerated are bad people until I'm placed in the position where my brother is incarcerated now, and I know he's in there on a wrongful conviction. You know, so I appreciate and I applaud everyone on the show for not looking at him despite, you know, his character, his
downfall.
Past. You know, yeah, his downfall, and I'm very grateful that everyone, you know, just took out the time to listen to him and get to know the current Mr. Big Man or whatnot. And I just wanted to just thank everybody for the time, you know. So thank you.
Absolutely, absolutely. We appreciate you tuning in and being supportive as well. And I want to personally thank all of you that decided to spend your time with the show tonight and to listen in. As always, I know that time is the most valuable asset that we have, and I always start my shows with that for a reason. And I'm going to say this. Right now, they're taking time away from Big Man. They're taking time away from him, and that is the biggest commodity that he could offer anyone, his family, his children, if he has any, all the above. They're taking time away from him. So time is a very valuable asset, family. But I want to leave and say this to you, and I'm going to say this quote again. I can't say it enough. We all have strength enough to endure the misfortunes of others. Family, it's always easy to step out on the outside and say, hey, coulda, shoulda, woulda. But guess what? What does it take and require of you to actually make that journey? I want to say this to you. Take a minute and take a walk in my shoes and understand how I see life. With that being said, y'all tune in next Tuesday because Ronnie, the First Lady of GPT, and I are going to be tackling some healthcare issues. Some serious things. We're going to start a series.